good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 17, 2017. Several opposition officials defect to join the Kiir administration in Juba.
Accepting the amnesty that the president has extended to those who have taken arms against the Republic of South Sudan in order to come and participate in the process of peaceful resolution to the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan.
And the new governor of Central Bank says his focus is on stabilizing the South Sudanese pounds.
We have a team of experienced bankers. The Minister of Finance is a banker, my deputy is a banker, and all of us, we are bankers. So we can understand ourselves and move and be able to move forward, no problem.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. At least 10 officials of the SPLM-IO faction allied to former first vice president Riek Machar have defected to the Kiir administration. The officials include a major general, former unity state lawmakers, and designate members of the South Sudan's transitional assembly. Presidential spokesman Atenywe Kateny says the government will receive any former rebel who returns to Juba for the sake of peace. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
10 politicians and army generals who say they are loyal to Machar say they decided to join current first vice president Taban Dengai to implement the country's 2015 fragile peace agreement. The group from Khartoum was led by Sebit John McGurk, the deputy chairperson of the SPLM-IO's National Committee for Roads and Bridges. Speaking in Arabic, Magok told reporters in Juba this morning they decided to join Taban Dengai because they believe the government wants peace.
We came because we believe in peace and we came to work for it, so we can bring our people out of war through rebuilding the national reconciliation which has been destroyed in the past 3 years. We will cooperate with the government and implement the peace agreement.
Other members include Susan Peter Machar, who was appointed to the Transitional National Legislative Assembly by Machar. She fled Juba when fighting flared up in Juba in July. SPLM-IO Major General George Ruankot, who was based in Bentiu, says he believes that President Salva Kiir and first Vice President Guy are working to restore peace. Speaking in Arabic, he says, anyone who does not embrace peace at this critical moment does not have a spirit of patriotism.
We left Machar and came to General Taban so that we can implement the peace agreement. We are for peace. We don't care who brought the peace, but we are here to implement it. We came as members of the parliament of former unity state, including army officers. We believe that the call of the president is right, and whoever does not support this call is not a South Sudanese. Our president is for peace, and he made an oath in front of God and people.
Dixon Gatluak, a deputy military spokesman of the SPLM-IO faction allied to Machar, speaking by phone from neighboring Ethiopia, says his group is not aware of any defectors who have joined first Vice President Guy, and alleges that the group that arrived in Juba today has always been part of the government.
Remember, those who are in Juba are affiliated to Taban, and this is the government, because you can't sign a peace agreement within yourself. So for this case, we don't have any information on this issue. We have no anybody who left. We have no any politician who joined Taban, because we have no SPLM-IO in Juba. Our chairman is in South Africa. We are in Addis Ababa, as I am speaking to you, and our generals are in their locations. So this is baseless information, and it is actually wrong.
Asked whether he will return to Juba, Gatluak says Machar's loyalist like himself will return to Juba only after the 2015 peace agreement is revived, which he says won't happen while Guy serves as first vice president. Presidential spokesman Atenywe Kateny, who received the group on behalf of President Kiir upon their arrival at Juba International Airport, says the group returned to the capital because they accepted the call for peace.
Accepting the amnesty that the president has extended to those who have taken arms against the Republic of South Sudan in order to come and participate in the process of peaceful resolution to the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan through a national dialogue, which will be actually a wider forum for the people of South Sudan, starting from grassroots to state level and then to national level.
Attorney says it's good for the group to raise their grievances with the government rather than take up arms. He says the national dialogue Mr. Kir launched recently will restore peace in the country.
The Republic of South Sudan is for all of us. All the 64 tribes can live in without regards to the size of the tribe, because God has created us to be in this country. Nobody has upper hand than the other, apart from the fact that we can differ politically, but we have also the power of reuniting and reconcile the country and make the people of South Sudan feel the sense of belonging.
Last year, President Kiir announced an amnesty for all armed opposition groups fighting to topple his government. He called on them to lay down their arms and return to Juba, but only if they renounce violence. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
South Sudan's newly appointed governor of the Central Bank, Othuom Rago Ajak, says his first priority will be to advocate for reforms that stabilizes the South Sudanese pounds. Ajak says he will work with finance ministry officials to ensure the banking sector operates smoothly and generates revenue for South Sudan. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Minutes after his swearing in today, Bank of South Sudan Governor Othuom Rago Ajak said most of the challenges facing South Sudan's economy are due to a lack of good policies and guidance. Ajak vows to change that.
We shall put our house in order in the central bank. Let's say, do something with the banking system, commercial banks and the central bank shall be able to produce a policy to address the present problems in the economy.
South Sudan's inflation rate has risen to more than 800% in the past several months. One U.S. dollar now exchanges for more than 100 South Sudanese pounds on the black market. Ajak says his first duty is to work with the finance ministry officials to stabilize the exchange rate for the pound against the dollar. He believes new managers at the central bank and the Ministry of Finance will work hand in hand to improve the country's banking system.
We have a team of experienced bankers. The Minister of Finance is a banker, my deputy is a banker, and all of us, we are bankers. So we can understand ourselves and be able to move forward, no problem.
Others say there is a problem. Moses Hassan, the newly appointed Trade and Industry Minister, says appointing new officials will not alone fix South Sudan's economic problems. For one thing, he says, South Sudan is a landlocked, so citizens must produce more food and stop depending on neighboring countries. Hassan vows to work closely with the Agricultural Ministry to boost local food production to help kick-start the economy.
Our economy is very much import-oriented. We do import a lot from our neighboring countries, including food items. So what we are going to do is what also the other ministries are doing, is to see into it that we try our level best to be able to produce a lot of food, you know, in our country, which would be now for self-sufficiency.
Minister Hassan says once that happens, his ministry can work to improve the living standards of the ordinary South Sudanese. As it stands, he says, many families find it hard to put a meal on a table for their children.
We want to see into it that you know, our common people can afford to buy basic commodities such as food and, you know, and other basic items. In fact, to me, I see it's one of the bending issues actually facing a lot of our people.
Both Ajak and Hassan vote to attract more investors to South Sudan, which they say will also help country's ailing economy improve. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Secondary school students preparing for final exams in Imatong State say they are disappointed to learn that officials have postponed the exams to March 6th. State education officials say the exams were delayed because the government has not released funds for the exercise. Teachers are advising students to take advantage of the extra time to study so they can perform better. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
National Education Minister Deng Deng Yai announced in Juba earlier this month that senior four final examinations were rescheduled from January 9th to March 6th. Yai says the government did not have money to pay for printing the final examinations. 19-year Cinderella Joyce, a senior four student at Dr. John Garang Memorial Secondary School in Torit, says she's disappointed their examinations were postponed.
I don't know what to do. My aim was to join other training and the other courses. But now, due to the examination postponement, it again taken me back to revise books and leave other things behind. Let them bring us for us examination on that specific days. We don't want any more expansion.
Saki Roni Aldo is a senior 4 student at Bishop Akio Memorial Secondary School in Torit. Aldo doubts the government will release the funds in time for the March examination. He says the delay in exams is likely to force some of his colleagues to drop out of school.
We are repeating classes. It's now like we are in senior 5, which is not good really. That is not happening again.
Winnie James is another final year student at Bishop Akio Memorial Secondary School. She says unlike the rest of her family members, she did not celebrate Christmas and the new year because she was preparing for the examinations in January. James says she was shocked to hear the examinations were postponed.
I was going to Uganda to do my computer course there, but now it has really affected me. Even now, my morale toward education is not good. Because we South Sudanese, we don't believe in what we are saying. They just like pushing examination. That's why people like me, I have given up in reading.
Student Salomonok Saturlino of Akio Memorial Secondary School says he wants education officials to come up with a consistent schedule for final examinations each year.
Yeah, I'm disappointed because during Christmas even I could not even enjoy the Christmas. You know, at that time people were enjoying, but for me to enjoy it, you also think. If exams, that is going to be in January. If I'm going to enjoy Christmas like the rest of people, it means I'm going to fail. Even if it disappoints me, if I would have known that it is going to be in March, I would have even enjoyed with the rest of people.
But the student Helen Teteo Lokanga of the Torit-based Dr. John Garang Memorial School says she is relieved that officials postponed the examinations. She says she wasted a lot of time during the festive season and hopes to use the remaining time to prepare for examinations.
The postponement of this examination has actually of a great importance to me, most especially people like us, because we have been busy during exams. You know, at home, we are two girls only. My mother wanted us to help her smearing houses, washing, making Christmas cakes, and so many things.
Teacher Unsi Celestino is encouraging the students to use the remaining time to study harder now that the examinations have been delayed.
I'm appealing to each one of us who is in the school to work hard. Education is key to everything. Nowadays, if you do not read, life in the future becomes very difficult. So I'm appealing to everybody, especially our female students, should work hard. And they should compete among themselves. Once, if a student is performing better, we'll give him or her a clue that in future, he or she will become responsible in society, in the state, in the payam where he or she is serving, and in the whole South Sudan.
Imotong State Education Minister Jacob Atari Albano is urging students to work hard and read the topics they did not study in class and assures students the examinations will not be postponed again.
The reason why this examination is postponed is just because the money is not given immediately. They are going to address it as soon as possible.
Minister Atari says all schools should provide classrooms where the examination candidates can sit and prepare for their examinations with the help of their teachers. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at 1 year anniversary of the militant attack on Kenyan soldiers in Somalia. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan. or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you think it's important for girls to finish their education before getting married?
Yeah, actually, education is the strongest tool to everyone, not only even women. So it is an added advantage if a woman is educated and then thinks about getting married.
Very important. First of all, girls or women are vulnerable. And before they complete education, it becomes a challenge either to develop holistically, but once they are done with education, they can actually develop.
I think it's very important for girls to finish education before getting married because these days it's necessary for girls to be educated. Like, for example, if girls are educated, it's very hard for them to be harassed by gays.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Today is Tuesday and it's time for our health segment. Today we are talking about a new antibiotics. There is a worldwide two-pronged effort to fight drug-resistant microbes. One of them is all hands on deck effort to find and test new antibiotics. The other is to make sure people don't come in contact with potentially deadly bugs in the first place. And most of the bugs are found in crowded places like buses and subway cars. Now some new technology may be able to reduce the threat. VOA's Faith Lapidus reports.
Light rail cars in Budapest are getting a coating of a unique bacteria-fighting spray called Resistin. A company spokesman says this is the city's first line of defense against a pandemic.
A járványok és fertőzések legnagyobb veszélye, ugye, hogy érintéssel a kórokozókat át tudjuk adni egymásnak.
Our coated surface reduces the number of microbes by nearly 90%, thereby contributing to halt the spread of epidemics.
Mi azt gondoljuk, mi ezzel tudunk hozzájárulni ahhoz, hogy megállítsuk a járványok terjedését.
Company officials say the antibacterial coating can last up to a year, is completely harmless to humans, and can be easily sprayed on all kinds of surfaces. The spray is also being used in at least one medical center as a way to avoid spreading infection.
A technológia, amit mi most használunk, ez sokkal innovatívabb.
It is enough to apply it once, and we don't need to continuously disinfect the surfaces, because this nanotechnology prevents the spread of bacterial or virus infections within our clinic.
And hopefully help stop the spread of bacteria between people. More than a million potentially sick passengers use the Budapest light rail and underground every day. Faith Lapidus, VOA News, Washington.
Kenyans are marking 1 year yesterday since dozens of soldiers stationed in Somalia were killed in an attack by militant group Al-Shabaab. The day is especially painful for families that lost loved ones that day or have yet to discover what happened to their missing sons and brothers. Mohammed Yusuf has the story for VOA from Nairobi.
On January 15, 2016, Somali militant group Al-Shabaab attacked a Kenyan military base at El Ada in Somalia's Gedo region. The attack was captured in an Al-Shabaab propaganda video that shows well-armed fighters storming and overrunning the base after a huge explosion, said to be the work of a suicide bomber. Al-Shabaab said it killed more than 100 soldiers, although other sources have put the death toll even higher. The Kenyan government has remained silent about what transpired that day and the casualties. The day of the attack, Nancy Njeri made a frantic call to her husband's cell phone. She says she did not know he was in El Ade and could not get her calls to go through. Then she called the phone number he was using in Somalia, and a person who answered told her he was one of the soldiers killed in Somalia. She says she did not believe it and was called by the military a week later to go for a DNA test. 2 weeks later, she was told her husband was dead. This was not the first time Al-Shabaab fighters have successfully targeted an isolated base held by soldiers with AMISOM, the African Union mission in Somalia. In June 2015, 50 Burundian soldiers were killed when the Islamist militant attacked an AMISOM base in Lagos, central Somalia. 3 months later, 19 Ugandan troops were killed when Al-Shabaab attacked a base in Janale in Lower Shabelle region. Patrick Wabomba is one of the dozens of parents still searching for loved ones after the El Ade attack. He says no one knows whether his son is alive or dead. The family was given DNA test, he says, but after that, they were told to go back home and wait for a report. They still have no information about his son. Al-Shabaab said it captured 12 soldiers in the attack, half of whom have since appeared in the group's propaganda videos. Heroes Oasis Counseling Center, which provides psychological support to the families of Kenyan soldiers, was founded by Immaculate Kukubo, who says life has been difficult for families who lost loved ones in Somalia.
The state of some of these families is really, really sad. They are very traumatized, especially the families of soldiers who are still unaccounted for. Because these families, in 1 minute, they are thinking, maybe our son is still out there. And in another minute, they are thinking, no, it is not possible that 1 year down the line, our son is out there. So they oscillate from hopefulness to hopelessness.
Kenya sent its troops to Somalia in 2011 after a series of attacks on its soil by Al-Shabaab. The group has vowed to keep attacking Kenya and its forces until it withdraws its soldiers from Somalia. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A South Sudanese woman was recognized by Queen Elizabeth II. She says she's humbled by the recognition, but much more work lies ahead of her in her native country. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
It's been about 2 weeks since the announcement was made that Akuja Mading Degareng would be recognized by the British monarchy for her work with Girls' Education South Sudan, a UK-funded nonprofit that tries to bridge the gap between the number of boys and girls attending school, the number of qualified teachers, and the nation's high illiteracy rate. In South Sudan, less than 30% of the population can read. Mading says the pride and joy she felt by the Queen's recognition is overshadowed by the immense amount of work in the country that still needs to be done.
It's a much bigger issue than keeping schools open, you know, and providing girls with cash, for example. We have a huge gap in terms of teachers who are qualified. So, yeah, schools are open, but we still have a big question about the quality of teaching that's being provided.
Mading was awarded the Member of the Order of the British Empire, which recognizes contributions in public service and work in the arts and sciences. She says from her experience, early education is the key to building a sustainable life.
The fact that I'm an independent person, I was able to, you know, I'm supporting myself, I'm supporting parts of my family. I don't think without education I'll be able to be in this position. And I think that it only, yeah, it's a responsibility. I feel that it's my responsibility to ensure or to play a part in bringing that right to others as well, particularly girls.
Mading's work engages young women, but she also tries to keep boys in school. According to Girls Education South Sudan, about 70% of primary schools in South Sudan are owned by the government, but only a fraction of the country's annual budget is set aside for education.
In the constitution, we're supposed to have 10% of the national budget, you know, allocated to education. But since independence, the budget for education has not gone beyond 5%.
Girls Education South Sudan says only 40% of primary school and 57% of secondary South Sudanese teachers are trained. And that's created a huge gap in providing an adequate teaching staff.
There's a lot of question around what is the quality of education our children are receiving. That, for me, is a big question that needs to be addressed. We cannot address it overnight, but we need to have an effective strategy as to, you know, how we maintain the system with the teachers that we have, but at the same time provide them with the skills to be able to deliver the quality of education that we as South Sudan would like to see.
Girls Education South Sudan is funded in large part by UKAID, with several offices across the country. So far, more than 240,000 girls and 300,000 boys have benefited directly from Girls Education South Sudan's work. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. About a dozen SPLMIO officials allied to former First Vice President Riek Machar defected to the Kiir administration today. They include a major general, former Unity State lawmakers, and members of South Sudan's Transitional National Assembly. The officials returned to Juba today to join the national dialogue that President Salva Kiir announced last month. Presidential spokesman Atenye Wekatenye says the government will embrace any former rebels who lay down their weapons and return to the capital. The group from Khartoum was led by Sebit John Magok, the deputy chairperson of the SPLMIO's National Committee for Roads and Bridges. Magok says they decided to join the current vice president, Taban Dengai, because they believe the government truly wants peace. Other members include Susan Peter Machar, who was appointed to the Transitional Legislative Assembly by Machar and who fled Juba when fighting flared up in July. But Dixon Gatluck, a deputy military spokesman of the SPLAIO, says his group is not aware of any defectors who have joined Guy and alleges that the group that arrived in Juba today has always been part of the government. South Sudan's newly appointed central bank governor, Otham Rago Ajok, says his first priority will be to advocate for reforms that stabilize the local currency, the South Sudanese pound. Ajok says he will work with finance ministry officials to ensure the banking sector operates smoothly and generates revenue for South Sudan. Minutes after his swearing in, Bank of South Sudan governor Otham Ajok said most of the challenges facing South Sudan's economy are due to a lack of good policies and guidance. And finally, Imatong State residents preparing for final secondary school examinations, which were due to be held on January 9th, say they're disappointed to learn that officials have postponed those examinations to March 6th. Education officials say the exams were delayed because of government delays in releasing funds for the exercise. Teachers are advising students to take advantage of the extra time to study so they can perform even better. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Mamoria by JJD Muzika. Well, we have Sam Mapangala instead of JJD Muzika, but all in all, that's music for your ears. We have been listening to Sam Mapangala with the song Marina. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.